the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
New exchange control regulations have been published, and they're the most sweeping announced in decades, with serious implications for crypto. The regulations are subordinate to the Currency and Exchanges Act, which is nearly a century old, prompting many to wonder whether, not really whether we need new regulations, but why we have exchange controls at all. If the purpose of exchange controls is to protect the value of the rand, well, it's failed spectacularly. The rand was introduced in 1961 and has lost more than 99% of its value against the US dollar since then. Think about that. So it's not unfair to ask, what is the purpose of these regulations and what are they trying to solve? And then to question whether they're succeeding in any measurable way. For the Bitcoin community, there's understandable outrage at the intended reach of these new regulations. Anything built on the blockchain, whether Bitcoin, tokenized stocks, or stablecoins, are treated the same. They're considered capital, whereas some of these are clearly closer in character to securities. If you self-custody Bitcoin, you could be forced to deposit it on an exchange where it can be better monitored and controlled by the authorities. We're joined now by Ricky Allardyce, co-organizer of the Adopting Bitcoin Conference, who has been canvassing opinions in the crypto community about this very thing. Hi, Ricky. Thanks very much for your time. You've been speaking to people in the Bitcoin community and in the crypto community. What are some of the key problems identified in these new regulations?
Yeah, look, I mean, everyone's extremely concerned. We, as the Adopting Bitcoin Cape Town Conference, have quite a finger on the pulse with people on the ground, you know, the circular economies to businesses to individuals, so kind of across the whole spectrum of crypto and Bitcoin holders. And everyone is extremely concerned about this. And fundamentally, what it comes down to is that the draft regulations, and I must emphasize this is draft, are seeking to criminalize self-custody. And self-custody just means holding your own Bitcoin private keys. So not trusting it to a third party or an intermediary, you hold it yourself. And that is the entire purpose of Bitcoin. That is why it was designed. It was designed in retaliation to the 2008 financial crisis, where Satoshi Nakamoto had a look at that and saw that intermediaries and banks cannot be trusted to hold your assets for you. And that's how Bitcoin was born and subsequently spawned the rest of the crypto industry. So this draft regulation seeks to remove that and criminalize that. Now, like you and I had this conversation the other day, Bitcoin will be fine, crypto will be fine, but the individuals in South Africa will be turned into criminals overnight. And that's where everyone has a problem with this.
All right, so it's clear that the grey listing features prominently in the framing of these regulations. South Africa is determined to do whatever the Financial Action Task Force demands of it to remain in good odor with it. And are there not some reasonable concerns around this in terms of crypto's potential for illicit flows and terrorism financing?
Yeah, look, that's always the argument any authoritarian uses to try to criminalize something, you know. Criminals use it, so therefore we need to stop it. I'd like to point out to people that the US dollar is used for the vast majority of criminal flows worldwide, and the US dollar has not been criminalized. So that is like saying murderers use hammers, therefore we must ban all hammers, you know, and turn workmen into criminals because they happen to use hammers and have a large amount of hammers in their tool shed. They put them on a list and they must be suspicious of them. The other point I'd like to raise is that FATF is an unelected bureaucratic group that sits outside of South Africa. This is an American working group and is not subject to South African democratic oversight. So we have this unelected group of bureaucrats from another country telling us how to run our affairs. That's a major red flag to start with. But yes, this is a major concern, and I understand why government would make the argument that criminals use crypto. And for sure, some criminals do. But there's a lot of people that are not engaged in crime, the vast majority of crypto holders that are not engaged in crime. And the reason why they hold Bitcoin is to escape the ravages of inflation, which is as a result of the Reserve Bank printing money. And what this draft regulation seeks to do is criminalize people that are trying to make the best investment decisions possible for themselves and for their families, and the government is seeking to criminalize them. And that's why this needs to be resisted.
All right, let's talk about this issue of self-custody a little bit more. This is a red line for many in the crypto community. I mean, you've mentioned already Satoshi Nakamoto. He develop Bitcoin with this in mind, the idea that you could self-custody your coins on a hardware or a software wallet without having the authorities get their hands on it. Now, many South Africans may not know about the confiscation of privately held gold in the US, but it did happen back in 1933. It's a long time ago. It's nearly a century ago. But Americans were basically forced to hand over their gold, and they were forced to sell it to the government at $20 an ounce. And then lo and behold, a few years later, the government revalued gold at $35 an ounce. Now, there are fears that something similar could be happening again, but this time with Bitcoin.
Absolutely. The difference being that the South African government doesn't have control over the Bitcoin price, so they won't be able to revalue the Bitcoin. But what they most likely will do is use the Expropriation Without Compensation Act to expropriate people, and that the provisions are already made to expropriate private property. And my guess is that they are looking to expropriate Bitcoin. And it's impossible for them to expropriate Bitcoin from individuals who self-custody it around the country. There's far too much legwork involved. The amount of revenue they make won't justify the cost they have to incur to do it. So anyone holding your Bitcoin in self-custody is the best defense you could have against the overreaching government that's trying to steal your money. But if it has all been put into regulated custodians that have to jump through hoops for the government to get their regulation and to maintain their licensing, then it's much easier for the government to go and steal that Bitcoin and claim it. And if this sounds outlandish, take a look at governments around the world that have publicly declared Bitcoin holdings. So the US government holds about 1 million coins. Every single one of those has been confiscated. So you could say stolen, confiscated through some means. The North Korean government holds a very large amount of Bitcoin. They have a hacker group that works with them called the Lazarus Group. I implore anyone listening to this, go and research the Lazarus Group. It is terrifying what they have done. They have stolen hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin from very, very sophisticated actors. And they've also even hacked a central bank. They hacked the Bangladeshi central bank and stole hundreds of millions of dollars. So these are very sophisticated actors. And so what I'd like to point out to people is that if the South African government passes this legislation and forces people to put their Bitcoin onto exchanges, South Africa will become a honeypot par excellence for the rest of the world, for all the hackers in the world, the Lazarus Group. I'm sure there's US-sponsored state hackers out there doing the same thing. Everyone will try to hack and steal that Bitcoin. And there's no guarantee that the government can give you that that Bitcoin won't be stolen and be secured, because we have seen thousands of exchange hacks happen over the past 15 years. I mean, they happen all the time. The handful of exchanges in South Africa that are then holding all those coins will be subject to constant attacks. And when the Bitcoin is stolen, it cannot be replaced. This is the point of Bitcoin. There's only 21 million. So it is much harder for the Lazarus Group or the US government or whoever, Mossad, whoever, to go out there and steal individuals' Bitcoin from individual wallets than it is to go and steal it from a hot wallet on an exchange. That's far, far easier to do. And so the risk that this brings up here, I mean, it raises a bunch of risks. But I can tell you now that if they go ahead with this and this Bitcoin is centralized on exchanges, some of it will get stolen and there's no way you can get it back. And the government's not going to stand surety for that. So it's just bad outcomes across the board. Bitcoin being stolen, Bitcoin being expropriated, and people's rights to private property being, constitutional rights to private property and privacy being completely trampled on.
Ricky, wouldn't people say that, I mean, okay, if these hacker groups like Lazarus in North Korea were to attempt a hack on the South African exchanges, they haven't succeeded from what we know so far. Why should they succeed in the future? And the exchanges in South Africa, per my conversations with them, have very, very high institutional grade security that prevents this type of thing. They're looking at this 24/7, and they've got a good track record up to now.
So no South African exchanges have been hacked up to now, but it's because South African exchanges are very much small fry in the bigger picture. So if you're a hacker group, you have to expend a large amount of time and energy. And there's a lot of work that goes into, before the hack actually happens, the social engineering aspect of it. So they can only deploy their resources to where they'll get the maximum output, right? They have, like, they hacked OKX in Singapore. That was a very big exchange. So for them to, up until now, hack Luno or Vela, for the amount of Bitcoin that's held in the hot wallet in those exchanges, is not worth the risk, blowing their cover, etc. It's not worth it. Go for better targets. But if you force every South African who holds crypto to put their crypto on an exchange, all of a sudden, the upside for a hacker just increased exponentially. So there's much more opportunity now for them to hack. And it does not matter how good your security is. All these exchanges that got hacked, you know, they all said they had good security. Some obviously didn't, but some did. And the hackers are constantly getting more and more sophisticated. So it just exposes South Africans to completely unnecessary risk. And I mean, that's all beside the point, because really what the point is you have the right to private property, the right to privacy. And so there's, we kind of moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic. If we're arguing about exchanges improving their security, like people's Bitcoin shouldn't be on there to start with. You know, not your keys, not your coins. It's the saying we have in the space. If you don't control your private key, you don't control your money. And fundamentally what this comes down to is that you have then given the government the final say-so over your assets and to choose what you choose. You no longer have the choice of how you choose to invest your money. And in which case then, I mean, the similarities between us and North Korea are probably quite striking. If you get to that point.
All right. Now, do you foresee that there would be a legal challenge if these regulations go through as currently written, that there would be, for example, a constitutional challenge because it violates potentially your right to property?
So we speak to a few different interest groups at the moment, and there's a couple of challenges here. So even before the regulations get passed, there's people talking about attacking the process of the way that the draft regulation is published. Your listeners might be familiar with this already, but the initial draft regulations were published for comment window closed mid-June. That subsequently got changed in mid-May. So they reduced it by about a month, the comment window. So the comment window for this is extremely short, which, I mean, what the interest groups are saying is that this is clearly symbolic that they are trying to rush this through as quickly as possible with as little comment as possible. So then there's a lot of procedural issues here that can be attacked. You know, the time's too short. There were two email addresses given for submitting comments. So, I mean, where are even all the comments that are being submitted going to the correct place? Do those email addresses even work? And then the second thing is, if it does get promulgated, it's an amendment to the Act. So the existing Exchange Control Act of 1965, which is an amendment to the 1933 initial Exchange Control Act. So yes, then potentially can you challenge it on constitutional grounds, can be challenged procedurally. There's a few routes available, and as I understand it, there are groups looking at all options here. One thing to bear in mind is that the government just had to retract its AI bill because it used AI to write the bill, and there were bogus references and AI slop in the actual draft bill. So the due care and skill applied here by the government may not be what it should be. So I think the attack surface on this is quite large. And just my reading of the situation has been that there's quite a lot of uproar in civil society about this already. Because it doesn't just affect Bitcoin holders and crypto holders. This affects the gold community, the silver community, you know, basically anything except property. I mean physical property by that. So this is an extreme overreach. And then, as you started with, you have to begs the question, like, why do we have exchange controls to start with? I mean, Nelson Mandela was set against trying to remove exchange controls. Why are we using apartheid-era laws in the new South Africa that seek to limit? It's a country supposedly, you know, 1994, we turned everything around, and now the country's supposedly focused on freedom. Like, why are we reducing people's monetary freedom like this? Like, why do you have to get government's permission before you can move your own capital out of the country that you've already been taxed on? So it raises a bunch of questions, and I think civil society should get upset about this. This can affect everyone. The Reserve Bank's mandate is to defend the value of the rand. Since the Reserve Bank was founded, the value of the rand has dropped by 99%. So they've failed completely in their mandate. And now they think they can tell us how we should be holding our own assets. People explicitly holding in self-custody to keep it out of the mandate of the Reserve Bank because they're so terrible at their job. So there's a lot of issues here. And I think South Africans, like I said, should get upset about this and get involved, take action, because this absolutely needs to be stopped.
Give us a practical example of this. You and I spoke previously on this. You know, in a practical way, if you were, and these regulations are passed as they are, you were to cross the border, you could have a border agent stop you. On what grounds, I'm not quite sure, but he could say, do you own any Bitcoin? And you say, yes, I do. So, okay, well, show it to me. And you'd be forced to present your hard drive or whatever, your wallet. And it would be protected by a seed phrase or a PIN or something like that. And you might be forced to hand that over to a border agent?
Correct. So in the draft regulation as they stand, there are a bunch of enforcement agents that can take action, border control agents being some of them, normal police being some of them, customs agents. So there's a whole wide variety of people. And without a warrant and just on suspicion. So if they suspect that you have unhosted cryptocurrency under those floorboards, then they can seize that cryptocurrency or at least, you know, start searching your person and premises on suspicion without a warrant. So it would seem to me, and I'm not a legal scholar, but it would seem to me that there's a bunch of breaches in the Constitution here that should be challenged. But like I said, I'm not a legal scholar. There are people smarter than me working on this. And so the other question it raises is that, okay, now let's say a border agent gets your seed words. You give them your seed words at the border. How do you know that those seed words are ever going to make their way back to Treasury and that border agent is not just going to make off with your Bitcoin? Because I can guarantee you that's going to happen in many cases. And the other major concern here is we've seen this happen in France recently, where a corrupt French official who worked in Treasury was releasing the names of individuals who declared their cryptocurrency holdings alongside their tax returns, releasing their names and addresses to organized crime. And there have been over 40 abductions, kidnappings of French citizens and being held ransom for their cryptocurrency. So we can expect this to happen at 100 times the rate that happens in France, because I mean, people probably agree that South Africa is more corrupt than France is. So, I mean, the scope for abuse here is just so massive. And, I mean, we shouldn't even be having this conversation, because up until now, South Africa has been one of the, on the forefront of being one of the most pro-Bitcoin countries in the world. And I mean, you've seen it yourself, the amount of projects that are happening in South Africa around Bitcoin, circular economy projects that are lifting people out of poverty, businesses that are working in the space, that are building cool stuff, generating revenue, paying taxes, all of this goes away immediately if this gets passed and it criminalizes a bunch of people, and you'll have all entrepreneurs working in the space and all people who hold value in Bitcoin will leave. They'll just leave if they can, and you'll stifle so much innovation. So it's just the most knee-jerk reaction, I suppose, if you want to be charitable to it. Is what it is, or it's far more insidious than that if you want to be more tinfoil hat about it. But yeah, I mean, I had lunch with two guys yesterday who have been in Bitcoin since 2010, and their take on this was, if this passes, we're out, we're leaving. We'll take our money to Mauritius or to, you know, El Salvador, Panama, or wherever. But the South African government's not getting a finger on it.
Right. Yeah, so it's interesting that the regulations come out around about the same time that the government pulls its draft national AI policy, because the AI policy was found to have hallucinated and come up with some fictitious academic studies. And it does raise questions about how these policies are put together and who actually are the authors of this. And I guess this is something that you mentioned, that you want to look at the process here. How did they come to these regulations?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, something else on that is someone writes these draft regulations. The asymmetry here is crazy. If these regulations get accepted into law and you are found in contravention of them, you face 5 years in jail or R1 million minimum fine for self-custodying Bitcoin. The person who wrote those regulations faces no sanction at all if they get struck down. So it's a bit asymmetric. So they're free to make these attacks on you, but you have no, you know, the recourse here is limited. So people have to live in fear, form action groups and spend a bunch of money to try to fight it. And I mean, if you think about the cost that's gone into just fighting this draft regulation already from everyone's man hours involved countrywide, it's, you know, it's millions already. So that's just a separate point here. But yeah, who writes these things? Their name should be on it, so we know who they are, and we should be able to see what their conflicts of interest are. Because I've spoken to some people who are under the impression that Treasury is just flexing. They are trying to feel relevant because they want to maintain the exchange controls, and they're being as draconian as they can to try to enforce exchange controls, because they feel like there's the cracks in the bucket, you know, and it's leaking. The other view is that there's people outside of South Africa, like the FATF, who are instructing this and guiding this, and it's a global coordination policy, and South Africa is the thin end of the wedge. Either way, we need to know who's behind this so that civil society can take action and shine a light on it, because, you know, sunlight is the best disinfectant. So all of this stuff is done very much in secret, and it has the ability to very far-reaching consequences. You know, the crypto sector globally has been one of the biggest growth industries. South Africa is not, you know, we've had significant growth there. There's a large amount of crypto companies. If you look at how many CASP licenses we issued, it's over 200. There's more than 200 companies doing business, employing people, providing, generating revenue, paying taxes, etc. And that'll all largely go away. Because what kind of investor in their right mind is going to invest in the crypto industry if the government can steal your assets through expropriation? So, yeah, I mean, it's very concerning. And as citizens of this country, I think we deserve to know who's behind writing these laws.
All right. And I guess then the question is, it's now open for comment until 18th of May. This is something South Africans probably should become aware of, as you've very clearly laid out the case for that, why it affects everybody. There is a website that they can go to if they want to make comments. And I believe Dear South Africa is also going to be running a campaign on this as well.
Fantastic.
So yeah. I'll include a link to that website for those who do want to comment, and I urge people to make their thoughts felt on this. I think finally, Ricky, it's fair to say that there's some people who won't object to these regulations. I would imagine lawyers, accountants, advisors of various types, because the more regulations you have, the more advice that you need to navigate through the maze, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's definitely some members of society that are licking the chops about this because it means more assets under their custody in short term. You know, there's more fees for them in there, and there's more lawyers that can be involved, etc. But I think on balance, from the response I've seen in the general public and from some of the large crypto service providers, it's overwhelmingly been against these regulations. And so I hope to see more civil society getting involved. One thing that people can do is they can go to propertyrightsdefense.org. It's a website that's been spun up by an action group that's taking action on this and coordinating different stakeholders. So it's not just about Bitcoin and crypto, it's property rights in general, because all property rights are under attack by this.
And what is the name of that website?
Propertyrightsdefense.org. One word.
Propertyrightsdefense.org.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you can go there, you can see what's happening. There's a breakdown of exactly what the act or what the regulations stipulate. You can go and read the actual regulations, which I recommend everyone does if they're interested. Get your AI to give you a summary if you need to. And then what you can do to take action, how you can submit your comments, because everyone must go and submit a comment to this, because the Treasury has to reply to all the comments that are submitted. So the more comments we flood them with, the more work they need to do. And I don't need to make jokes about government work, but yeah, that's something people should go and do. And spread the word, speak to everyone that you know about this. This is the most, this is the largest overhaul of the exchange control regulations in decades. And this will have implications for decades to come. You might not be holding crypto or Bitcoin yourself personally yet. There's some people that are not doing this yet. But a large amount of people in South Africa are already holding crypto and Bitcoin. And those people naturally over time will seek to self-custody the Bitcoin as they go further down their journey. And if you have that right taken away from you, it undermines the entire use case for crypto in South Africa. Like I said, crypto and Bitcoin will be fine, but you won't be. And South Africa won't be. And that's, you live in South Africa, you're South African. I think this is important for everyone.
And I guess it's fair to say that one can imagine that it would actually promote a black market for crypto. In other words, peer-to-peer transactions that nobody knows about.
Absolutely. But that's, you know, goes without saying, but it will turn average law-abiding citizens into criminals overnight. And that's the real concern here. When governments are passing laws that turn law-abiding citizens into criminals, you should have questions.
Okay, Ricky, we're going to leave it there. That was Ricky Allardyce, co-organizer of the Adopting Bitcoin Conference. Thanks very much for your time, Ricky.
Thank you, Kieran. All the best.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.